This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis spent the last year in Afghanistan, where he hoped to find conditions matching the cautious optimism he heard from U.S. commanders. But in a recent piece in the Armed Forces Journal, he wrote that what he saw bore no resemblance to rosy official statements, and the American people deserve better than what they've gotten from their senior uniformed leaders over the last number of years. Colonel Davis concludes, simply telling the truth would be a good start. We want to hear from those of you who served in Afghanistan. How does what you saw there match with what you've heard since you got home? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, the last week of Abraham Lincoln's war, but we begin with Afghanistan. Lieutenant Colonel Davis could not be with us today. We begin instead with Congressman Jim McGovern, a Democrat from Massachusetts, one of four members briefed by Lieutenant Colonel Davis, and he joins us now from his office on the Capitol. And nice to have you with us.
Happy to be with you.
And did you get significantly more in that briefing that we saw in that Armed Forces Journal piece?
Well, I think that Armed Forces Journal piece kind of sums up, the basic concern that Lieutenant Colonel Davis has, and that is that, notwithstanding the rosy characterizations by our leading military officials about what's happening in Afghanistan, things are much more dire. I mean, what he's asking for is, more of an honest discussion. And he also, expressed concern about the fact that more and more information about Afghanistan is being considered classified, so the Congress and the American people aren't getting as much access to what's really happening there. So, what he has done is confirm some of the concerns that I've had over the years. And look, I mean, I think we need to wind down our involvement in Afghanistan. We have spent billions and billions of dollars there. We have paid a heavy price. We're at a point now where I'm not even quite sure what our mission is anymore.
Some of his most scathing comments are reserved for the Afghan forces. We had this today from, this is from Lieutenant General Curtis Scaparotti, who said that Lieutenant Colonel's view is one person's view, and said Afghan forces will be good enough to take over from the American-led coalition as we pull out over the next couple of years.
Well, I think that's a rosy assessment. By the accounts that I've heard when I've been over in Afghanistan, and by from accounts that I've heard from, soldiers who have returned, they don't have a lot of trust in the Afghan armed forces or security forces, and they don't have a lot of trust in the Afghan government. I mean, they believe that President Karzai is a crook, that the corruption is so deep in that country that it's not salvageable, and that, Americans are putting their lives on the line, basically to defend a government that's not worth defending. I mean, we went there to go after al-Qaeda. We got Osama bin Laden, not in Afghanistan, but in Pakistan. Yet we have, tens of thousands of troops there. And, and for what? What is the mission? And to imply that somehow the Afghan security forces are ready to, take over, and they've achieved this professionalism, I think it's just plain wrong, and I think Lieutenant Colonel Davis points that out.
And is it his advice that we should leave as soon as possible?
Well, I mean, look, what he is doing is giving us the truth. What he is doing is telling us that we should demand that more be unclassified, that there be a better awareness of what's going on, in order for us to make our decision as to what to do. The fact of the matter is, things haven't been going well for quite some time. And, look, as somebody who's been here for a little while, since the war in Afghanistan began, I mean, we've been misled about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan time and time again. And I think a lot of us are getting sick and tired of the whitewash. We'd rather have the clear, unvarnished truth so that people can make up their minds as to what our policy should be. Well, but I don't think it's worth another American life, to support a corrupt government in Afghanistan, or to support a security force of Afghans that, quite frankly, there's no trust in them.
Let's name names. General David Petraeus, who gets credit for turning things around in Iraq, took over in Afghanistan a little over a year ago. Is this the person responsible? Is this the person to whom we should be asking questions about, the lieutenant colonel calls lies?
Well, I absolutely, I obviously think that General Petraeus should be asked questions. He's in a new position right now. But what we also believe is that more information should be declassified. You know, the National Intelligence Estimate on Afghanistan should be made public. The American people ought to see what's in it, so they can make up their minds. You know, these wars. All the information about these wars shouldn't be kept secret. People ought to know what's going on. People ought to know why we're spending billions and billions of dollars over in Afghanistan, nation building and supporting a corrupt government. People ought to know the facts, because their sons and daughters are the ones who are being sent over there, you know, to risk their lives on behalf of this policy. And you know, there's this tendency to every time you know high military officials are asked to say everything is going well, we're on track, as if to say anything different somehow undermines you know our mission there. Bottom line is, you know, we should demand the truth, and based on the truth and based on the facts, then Congress and the American people can make up their mind as to what our policy should be. But you know, in my own opinion, based on what I've seen, based on what I've heard, based on my conversations with Lieutenant Colonel Davis, you know, I think we ought to end this war as soon as humanly possible. I think we ought to stop, you know, throwing billions and billions of dollars every year at this country, which, you know, most of the things that we have done over there aren't even sustainable.
One more question, and then we want to get to some callers. And by the way, if you served in Afghanistan, did what you see on the ground when you were there comport with what you've heard since you've got back from senior U.S. commanders? And Congressman McGovern, it seems clear that Lieutenant Colonel Davis has put his career on the line by issuing such a report so critical of his superiors. He's been quoted as saying he just about nuked himself.
Well, I think he's a patriot. I think people who tell the truth, in the face of consequences that might be difficult. I think we ought to praise them. You know, I've been reading that the Pentagon now wants to launch an investigation into Lieutenant Colonel Davis. I wish instead of doing that, they'd respond to some of the detailed analysis that Lieutenant Colonel Davis has put forward. We should be talking about this policy. We should be talking about the realities on the ground. But this kind of knee-jerk reaction that every time somebody within the military stands up and tells the truth, that all of a sudden they're subject to an investigation and their character is questioned, I think is just wrong-headed. We ought to demand the truth. We ought to expect the truth from high-ranking officials of the Pentagon. And again, I think over the years we have not been given the truth. And by any reasonable measure, I think most people, I think there's a consensus around that.
Congressman, thanks very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jim McGovern, a Democrat from Massachusetts, among those briefed by Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis on his return from Afghanistan. And again, there's a report in Armed Forces Journal. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. If you served, joining us here in Studio 3A, Jonathan Lande, National Security and Intelligence Correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers, who's written on U.S. defense and foreign policy for a number of publications, last in Afghanistan this past summer. John, nice to have you back with us.
It's nice to be here.
And does what you saw on the ground last summer comport with what you hear from those relatively rosy assessments by U.S. commanders?
Not at all. In fact, Lieutenant Colonel Davis's assessment is of no surprise to me or other journalists who've spent a long time on the ground in Afghanistan. I've been covering Afghanistan since the Soviets were there. Last summer, I went down south to Kandahar, which is one of the two provinces where the U.S. surge went into. And certainly I went places myself, just myself and my translator, I was dressed as an Afghan, that we wouldn't have been able to go to before the surge went in. However, the surge is coming out. And the Afghans down there know that. And all we heard the entire time we were down there was about how the Taliban have purposely not engaged the United States. They're not fighting face-to-face. Their leaders have gone to Pakistan to wait out the United States, to wait out the clock that President Obama himself set in December 2009. Why would they fight face-to-face with the United States when they know U.S. troops are leaving? The tribal elders I met with who are unable to go back to their villages told me that, well, they do go back occasionally, and as they drive down the main street, they look out and they see what they say are the Taliban, dressed obviously without their weapons. But they said, one of them said to me, you know, I know they're the Taliban. It's just the Americans don't. So I think that—
Why doesn't he just tell the Americans who they are?
Well— because he risks his life to do that. And there's a lot of these tribal elders living in Kandahar who are unable to go back to their villages. And I heard from ordinary people. For instance, I went out, walked out, and spent some time with some farmhands out in the villages and out in the fields in a place called Argandab, which was one of the most heavily contested areas of Kandahar before the United States went in. And they were saying, oh, yeah, well, they're still in the village, but they're just not. They're just waiting for the Americans to leave.
But that raises another question. If they're just waiting for the American forces to leave, does that not give the Afghan forces and indeed the Afghan government, as corrupt and as inefficient as it might be, time to start becoming less corrupt, less efficient, and more trusted by the people of Afghanistan?
Well, that's the other part of this war. This is the non-military part of the war. The government is itself, as you point out, ridden with corruption. You have an army that does not reflect the geographical dispersion of the ethnic groups in Afghanistan. Yes, it reflects the ethnic proportions, but a lot of the Pashtuns, which is the dominant ethnic group from the south, are not joining the army because they are simply waiting. They know, first of all, that they risk their lives doing that and the risk the lives of their families. But also they're waiting, sitting on the fence because they know what's coming. And what's coming, I believe, and a lot of people believe, is in fact a reversion to the Civil War that the United States interrupted in 2001 when it went in. Only this time, another observer said, Somalia on steroids, given the amount of weaponry the United States has poured in there. And it risks turning into a proxy war between Pakistan, which backs the Taliban, and its foe for the last 67 years, India. That threatens regional instability, and this is something that the Obama administration and the U.S. military refused to talk about publicly.
Jonathan Landay of McClatchy Newspapers, if you served in Afghanistan, how does what you saw on the ground comport with what you've heard from U.S. commanders after you got back? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We're also going to hear from Tom Donnelly of the American Enterprise Institute in just a moment. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan. U.S. troops in Afghanistan will soon begin to shift away from their lead role in combat operations and focus instead on providing training and support for Afghan forces. By the end of 2014, those Afghan troops are scheduled to take responsibility for securing their own country in full. U.S. commanders often express cautious optimism about the U.S. mission there, an outlook that's called into question by a recent opinion piece in the Armed Forces Journal by Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis. Over 9,000 miles, 12 months in Afghanistan, he writes, I witnessed the absence of success on virtually every level. We want to hear from those of you who served in Afghanistan. How does what you saw there match with what you heard when you got home? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Our guest is Jonathan Landay, National Security and Intelligence Correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers. And let's begin with Chris. And Chris is on the line in Monterey, California.
Good afternoon, sir.
Afternoon.
Hey, this time last year, I was serving in northern Helmand Province as an infantryman, and during my 7 months there, I have to say that I consistently saw the Afghan forces stepping up. I'm not trying to refute what Lieutenant Colonel said. In his area, things weren't as rosy after he left, but they're capable, and it's standard doctrine, you know, for fighting counterinsurgency to stand up the local security forces, and as we progressively step back, they step up, and I got to say, I saw that happen in my area.
Can you give us an example of what they did that might surprise us?
Absolutely. One of the biggest problems we had was their lack of ability to supply themselves and support themselves and move troops and equipment and supplies over the distances in the roads. Because as you know, the roads there are riddled with IEDs and ambush locations. By the time we left, their supply shop had set up their own convoys and resupplying their own positions without our assistance and without our supplies making up the shortfalls.
Logistical support is one of the crucially weak areas, not just of the Afghan forces, but that's a weak area of anybody's force.
Exactly. And by the time we left, we were able to turn over combat outposts that routinely saw contact not like the easy ones, you know, but the more difficult ones, in order to free up forces for us so that we could push further into enemy-held territory and thus create more of a bubble for the Afghan forces to stand up and take over.
So on the basis of what you saw in your area, and again, conditions are different everywhere, but from what you saw, those troops gave a good account of themselves.
Yes, sir, and it's just like in Iraq. If you do everything for them, there's no need for them to step up. But as we step back, they'll rise to the occasion, or at least they did in my experiences. I cannot speak for the whole country. I certainly can't speak for where the Lieutenant Colonel was, because, you know, the Army and the Marines are in different areas. But I got to say, I think I would have to say I'm equally cautiously optimistic, cautiously just because, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not a fortune teller. I don't have a crystal ball. But
well, Chris, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
No, not at all, sir.
Tom Donnelly is director of the Center for Defense Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. He joins us now on the phone from his office here in Washington. And nice to have you back on the program.
Nice to be with you.
And I wonder, there are two levels of which Lieutenant Colonel Davis writes about that are significant, one of which is his assessment that where he went, and that was a lot of different places, the tactical situation was from bad to abysmal. And the other was that we're not getting the truth from U.S. military commanders.
Yeah, if I could sort of take those in separate bites. There are many different wars going on in Afghanistan, in fact, have been for some time. And the good things versus bad things ratio often has a lot to do with where Americans are and where Americans aren't, American forces. So that's a complex subject that's probably worth a longer conversation. But the idea that the senior commanders in Afghanistan are willfully misleading people or sugarcoating things, I think, is a little bit difficult to sustain. It reminds me a little bit of the General Petraeus attempts during the Iraq surge to discredit the messenger if you don't like the message.
Well, that was an ad by MoveOn.org in a newspaper. This is an Army Lieutenant Colonel risking his career.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was once the editor of the Armed Forces Journal, published pieces that Danny Davis has written. He's a controversial and calls him like he sees him guy, but I would say also in this particular instance, I would debate his judgment.
Debate his Jonathan Lande again on what you've seen. Are U.S. commanders sugarcoating what they see?
Look, this is the essence of a debate that's going on between the administration on one side and with the military and the U.S. intelligence community, which recently published a national intelligence estimate that talked about a stalemate. And in fact, the intelligence community analyzed was that the situation, the stability and the situation that is in the South, where the surge has gone into, is probably not sustainable once the American troops leave. I have been embedded with Afghan forces. There are very, very capable Afghan forces. I've been in combat with incredibly capable Afghan forces. But by the U.S. military's own admission, only 1% of the Afghan army is capable of leading, of taking the lead role in its own in operations, and that much of the rest requires U.S. mentorship. But this is a problem that goes beyond the capability of Afghan forces to the political situation and the willingness of the Afghan forces to fight for political leadership in Kabul. If that political leadership becomes splintered over the idea of negotiating with the Taliban, which is what's happening, splintered along ethnic lines, then the troops that belong to the minorities, which are 60% of Afghanistan, are not going to fight for a government that makes that is going to make a deal with the Taliban along lines that ethnic leaders oppose. And you have a problem of potential splintering of the Afghan army.
And we'll get more callers in just a second, but I wanted to give Tom Donnelly a chance to come back on that.
Actually, I agree with a lot of that because it's so dependent upon the Afghans' read of what we're going to do. This is very much been a problem since the Afghanistan surge was announced. So all the good that the increase in forces and the commitment to counterinsurgency tactics have done are in many cases undercut, or at least in the long term undercut, by the announcement that, which began at the start, essentially, that we were going to withdraw. I think that this has made a number of trips to Afghanistan, and the case has always been, and the belief among Afghans and Pakistanis as well, is that we're not there for the long haul. And so people hedge their bets accordingly.
Let's get to Roy, and Roy's on the line with us from Fort Bragg in North Carolina.
How are you doing today?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I just got back from Afghanistan last week, actually, and I think that the arguments that are being made, not necessarily mutually exclusive. Like, I did see a lot of the security situation where I was become better.
And where was that?
I was in northern Kandahar in Kakrez District, and very rural area. And the security forces out there, you know, they were gaining credibility. They were gaining viability out there as well, and they tapped down the security situation. But I think in terms of the Taliban, a lot of people are just going to wait until our forces withdraw. Actually, a lot of times the security forces that we were training, they were ex-Taliban. You'd see the tattoos on their hands. And a lot of the family members of these security forces are Taliban. So, you know, that's going to be a big problem as well.
And so would you say that those forces are going to be, A, capable, and B, loyal?
Capable, but I don't know about loyal because, like I say, a lot of them, their family members are Taliban or ex-Taliban or just, you know, strongmen in the area. So I can see it kind of fracturing and reverting to, you know, a little tribal conflict.
All right. Roy, thanks very much. Welcome home.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Let's see if we go next to this is Nick, and Nick's with us from Virginia Beach.
Yeah, it's Nate, but that's all right.
Oh, I apologize.
Yeah, and I have to kind of echo what that gentleman just said. You know, I worked for Afghan forces in Helmand Province for Op Mashtrak down in Marja. I worked with a section called the Afghan National Civil Order Police. And these gentlemen are excellent fighters and are, you know, we're very good at what they do. And I think sometimes Americans may, or service members may compare Afghan forces to, you know, United States forces, and obviously there's a disconnect there. But for the level that they're at and where they are now, I think they did an excellent job.
Okay, and so you would have confidence in them? You would go out with them on patrol?
I have, yeah. I did go out with them on patrol many times.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I wanted Tom Donnelly to read you, I'm sure you read it, the section of Lieutenant Colonel Davis's report where he describes the Jare district of Kandahar, not far from where our last caller was, returning from a base on a dismounted patrol, gunshots audible as the Taliban attacked a U.S. checkpoint about a mile away. As I entered the U.S. command post, the commander and his staff were watching a live video feed of the battle. Two ANP, Afghan National Police, vehicles blocking the main road, leading to the site of the attack, the fire coming from behind a haystack. We watched as two Afghan men emerged, mounted a motorcycle, began moving toward the Afghan police in their vehicles. The U.S. commander turned around, told the Afghan radio operator to make sure the policemen halted the men. The radio operator shouted in the radio repeatedly, got no answer. On the screen, we watched as two men slowly motored past the ANP vehicles. The policemen neither got out to stop the two men nor answered the radio until the motorcycle was out of sight. To a man, U.S. officers in that area told me they had nothing but contempt for Afghan troops in that area, not disputing anything our callers have said, but that's in the report, and all those things can be true.
I think that's, yes, I think that all those facts could be, they're certainly credible to me.
And your experience, John Landing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have been, I nearly lost my life in September of 2009 when I was embedded with U.S. military trainers who were mentoring and training what was then considered the best battalion in the Afghan military. We went out on an operation. It was supposed to be a simple meeting operation going into a village to meet tribal elders who had already given the word that they prepared to acknowledge the authority of the Afghan government. However, someone had given advance word excuse me, that we were coming, and we walked into a hellacious ambush. We lost five Americans, nine Afghans, and I was very lucky to get out of there with my life. So there was word leaked by the Afghan side to the insurgents, and this happens. But of course, there are the Afghan military I was with were incredibly capable fought incredibly bravely in that battle.
Jonathan Landay of McClatchy Newspapers, also with us. Thomas Donnelly, Director of the Center for Defense Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Rob on the air. Rob with us from Salt Lake City.
Hello, gentlemen. I'm thoroughly enjoying this conversation. I want to make two historical perspectives, and then I'll give my quick experience when I was in Afghanistan. First, Alexander the Great called Afghanistan the land of the unruly. Also, in December of 59, President Eisenhower flew into Bagram, did a motorcade down to Kabul, and Afghans lined the route all the way down. It's a route I had done myself. Now, put that in perspective. Could you imagine President Obama doing that today? Of course not. But what he said was that the Afghan people were the most determined lot he had ever seen. And so I think historically we forget what we're dealing with here, and we're dealing with a tribal culture. I think just as the two men that you have on are talking about the politics being very delicate, which is true, I actually worked for the American Forces Network while I was in. I was there 4 years ago about this time. And my experience was that, the Afghan National Army and a lot of the volunteers did want to learn English. They did want to learn how to be capable. They did want to strive for a better life. But in my opinion, the bottom line is once we leave, that all goes back out the window. And just as, the two gentlemen you have said there with the Taliban waiting in Pakistan, they're going to come back over the border. And I have to agree that what we've built there the last 10 years will disintegrate, and then the tribalism will take over and it'll fall back into civil war.
Civil war, Tom Donnelly, is that a prescription that we're looking forward to in 2014?
Not immediately. The civil war of the 1990s between the departure of the Soviets and the attacks of 2001 was a bit of a unique beast. It's certainly the case that of the ethnic groups in Afghanistan, the Tajiks and the Uzbek and the Hazara, and actually a good slice of the Pashtun. I mean, we treat the Pashtun as though they're kind of a monolith, and that's hardly the case. Have no interest in the in Taliban rule, in influence from Pakistan, et cetera, et cetera. So there is a fairly solid anti-Taliban base that really accounts for the majority of the population and actually a majority of the country. That said, in the southern and southeastern parts of the country, there are unreconstructed Taliban, if you will, and of course, with Pakistani help and with under the directorship of the Quetta Shura or people like the Haqqanis, for example, there are plenty of people who can make life in Afghanistan miserable for Afghans. Their ability to generate a large-scale civil war, I think one should be somewhat skeptical about, at least in the foreseeable future. What I would really be worried about is that there will become a fight amongst a whole host of interested parties. Your caller mentioned the Indians. The Iranians would be the same. The Uzbek and the Tajiks across the border would naturally support their brethren. So the potential is there, but one should not think that we'll immediately go back to a late 90s kind of situation where you have shelling of Kabul, for example.
Jonathan Landay, we'll give you the last 30 seconds.
I think it depends a great deal on Pakistan and what it wants, and to a great deal on what the Americans and the Afghan government are talking to the Taliban about in terms of a political settlement of the war. If that settlement ignores the deep concerns and red lines of the minorities, the leaders of the former Northern Alliance, then I think that Afghanistan could see a resumption of that civil war. If there is an agreement among the Americans and Karzai government to talk to the former Northern Alliance, find out what their concerns are about bringing the reconciliation and address those concerns, then I think the chance for civil war is a great deal diminished. Unfortunately, that is not happening right now.
Jonathan Lande, thanks very much for your time. Our thanks as well to Thomas Donnelly of the American Enterprises Institute's Center for Defense Studies. We've been talking about an article called Truth Lies in Afghanistan in the Armed Forces Journal by Lieutenant Colonel Daniel L. Davis. Coming up, a Civil War historian needs your help. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.